No survivors following a passenger jet and military helicopter collision in the skies near Washington.
Grieving with everyone in our community and those in Washington, D.C. due to this very tragic incident that happened.
So what went wrong? The investigation has begun.
I have taken a look at the data online, the radar data, and pulled down a lot of the audio from air traffic control.
Today is Thursday, January 30th, and this is The Issue from VOA.
I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London.
We need you, Lord. We need you, Lord.
Today, we want to have a prayer that will give comfort to those who still have uncertainty, difficulty, and need words of wisdom.
Wichita Mayor Lily Wu at a prayer service following a tragic mid-air crash. All 64 people on board an American Airlines flight from Wichita, Kansas, as well as three soldiers on a U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopter, are presumed dead after the two aircraft collided near Washington. The jet and helicopter exploded on impact and plunged into the frigid Potomac River. President Donald Trump Thursday offered his sympathies.
Together we take solace in the knowledge that their journey ended not in the cold waters of the Potomac, but in the warm embrace of a loving God.
The National Transportation Safety Board Chair, Jennifer Homendy, says a thorough investigation has begun.
We have about nearly 50 people on scene, and in addition to our resources back at headquarters in our labs and throughout the agency.
It's going to be a big job. It always is when you're trying to piece together an airline crash. They have a lot of tools at their disposal, the radar data, the conversations between the tower and the helicopter and the tower and the jet, and of course, the black box on the jetliner.
Right. And you know, they'll probably try to put all the pieces of each of those aircraft back together and try to figure out where the impact was to the jet.
So let's get more on this now. Joining us is William Angeli, an aviation crash attorney, former Navy pilot. He's flown more than 1,000 hours in different types of military airplanes and helicopters.
Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us about this. We appreciate hearing your expertise. What can you tell us about what we know so far, and if you can also maybe break down the process of the investigation?
Yeah, I have taken a look at the data online, the radar data, and pulled down a lot of the audio from air traffic control exchanges with both the helicopter and the American Airlines flight, and just kind of listened to what was going on at the time, trying to get a little bit of insight. And a couple of interesting things that I noticed that I haven't seen yet posted in any of the news sources. DC has three runways, Reagan National. Runway 1, they're covering that, is a very long one, and that's the most used because it can be used by the larger jets. Runway 33, which also heads north, but 330, a little bit north and west, is a shorter runway. Last night, most planes were landing on runway 1. But air traffic control, right around the time of this accident, for some reason, was trying to get planes to land on 33. I guess they're trying to lighten the load on runway 1. So what I hear shortly before the crash is there's an American Airlines flight, 5307. They check in with the tower for landing. The tower responds to 5307 and asks, can you land on runway 33? 5307 says no, unable. So air traffic control tells 5307, go ahead and land on runway 1. Now, 5307 is also a CRJ-700 operated by PSA Airlines as an American Eagle flight, identical to the plane that crashed last night. So just a couple of minutes after 5307 declines to land on runway 33, flight 5342 checks in with the tower tower also asks him, can you land on runway 33? 5342 says, yes, I'm fine landing on runway 33. So tower then clears him to land. So we've got two identical airplanes, one landing almost due north on runway 1, one landing on runway 33, just a little bit north and west, just within a couple of minutes of each other. They're going to look alike. They're going to be the exact same size. At this time, we've got this helicopter, this Army helicopter, coming down the Potomac River. He's on a helicopter route, and it's a published route, and they call it Route 1. And Route 1 comes down the Potomac, kind of, you know, past the mall and then, you know, a little bit south of D.C. It brings those helicopters right across the approach end, the landing end of runway 33 and further down runway 1. But air traffic control was aware of this helicopter being, you know, right there, and asked the helicopter pilot, do you see the CRJ? Helicopter pilot responds, yes, I see the CRJ. Then air traffic control tells him to pass behind the CRJ. Captain of the helicopter says, okay, fine. So what I'm wondering, we've got two planes in the air at the exact same time. They look alike. The helicopter pilot probably, because, you know, when you're passing this airport, it's going to draw your attention in, right? It's big, it's lit, there's tons of activity. You're going to be looking that way. He saw 5307 and confirms to the tower that he sees the CRJ aircraft. What he didn't see was 5342, which would have been off to his left at the time. And tower didn't tell him that he had two CRJs in the air. He just said, I got one CRJ in the air. Do you see it? And the helicopter confirmed it. And then just a couple of seconds after that, the crash occurs.
So you think both planes, both of the American Airlines planes were in the corridor, but on two different runways?
Yes, yes, at the exact same time. That is what air traffic control audio recordings demonstrate.
So in other words, the air traffic controller confirming with the helicopter that the plane was there, but the helicopter pilot may not have realized there were two planes that were identical.
Exactly, exactly. Same kind of plane operated by the same aircraft. I mean, to the extent on a dark night you can see any of the markings, these two planes are going to look exactly alike. And so ATC only called out one of them. The helicopter confirmed seeing that. Didn't call out the other one, which was just right there.
Would it have been normal for the controller to say there's two of them in the air?
He should have. I mean, in that close of an airspace, I mean, honestly, to me, the head scratcher for me is what's this helicopter doing in that space at that time to begin with? But putting that aside for a moment, yes, when you're that tightly compressed, you would say you've got a CRJ landing on runway 1, you've got a CRJ landing on runway 33. Do you have them both in sight?
So
is what I would expect.
Why do you say it was unusual for the helicopter to be there?
Well, it's a published route, but, you know, I mean, air traffic control, part of what they do, and these guys are overwhelmed and overloaded, especially at these big airports, but part of what they do is just space traffic out, right? So, you know, I remember when I would fly through busy corridors, you know, they can have you reduce your speed. They can have you make a little circle somewhere out. You know, there's prohibited airspace out there, but, you know, he could have made a circle in another direction, any number of things, either to slow him down or reroute him, you know, around the landing end while these two planes are coming in. Just anything to have affected, you know, the timing of these two airplanes occupying the same space.
How do they conduct they're going to do the same thing you did. They're going to look at the radar data. They're going to listen to the chatter between the controller and the aircraft, right?
Right. Yes, they are. And I'm sure they have. I'm sure someone else has put this together. I just haven't seen it posted on the news yet or the other news outlets. And I thought, you know, that was very interesting because You got two identical planes, same space, same time, basically, and ATC only calls out one. Helicopter confirms seeing one.
You talked about the controllers being overwhelmed. Are they understaffed? Are they undertrained? President Trump sort of talked about standards today, and he, pondered the possibility that lowered standards might have contributed?
Not to my knowledge. On standards, understaffed, I think, has been an issue for a while, especially post-COVID. When COVID hit, for whatever reason, and I honestly don't know the exact reasons, but we did apparently lose quite a few air traffic controllers. Those numbers never came back to pre-COVID levels. And so I am aware that we are understaffed with, good air traffic controllers at a lot of these airfields. I am not aware that they're undertrained. I think these guys probably do it, generally do a good job and the best job that they can under the circumstances. But this one to me just seems like there's a whole lot going on within about a half a mile space, which in the air is just not very much space, and it just didn't get caught.
Interesting, too, though, that this is the deadliest air accident in the U.S. since 2009. So it's not like it's a routine thing that has to stop happening. But at the same time, it does seem like investigations take a long time. And the president himself noted that his frustration with that, and said, this one will be quick. Why do they take so long?
They take a long time because the NTSB is understaffed as well. And number one, there are a lot of different specialties that they will look at, because what they're going to strive for is, not to just throw out a theory. They want to get to the real bottom of it. So they're going to have to interview, all of the air traffic controllers that were in the area. They're going to have to interview people from the Army. They're going to have to interview eyewitnesses. They're going to have to interview American Airlines operations. A lot of different interviews. They're going to have to come back and try to look at the wreckage of the airplane and the helicopter to see if there was any kind of equipment malfunction. Maybe a light on the American Airlines plane wasn't working properly or something like that, that contributed to the helicopter not seeing it. And I don't know if that's a fact, but I mean, it's just one of the things that the NTSB is going to look at. So it takes them time to recover all of this wreckage, to put it, try to put it back together. And a lot of times they will literally puzzle piece it back together in a large warehouse or hangar somewhere, and then study it, see what they can learn from it, study all of the radar data, study all of the air traffic control transmissions. And, it takes them quite a while. And at the same time, I mean, there are still other planes, unfortunately, especially on the general aviation side, that crash, that they have to also investigate, and that take up, time and resources. So they're spread very thin. They're trying to do a very thorough job, especially on these big ones like this. And so they go slow normally. They go even slower when they're a little bit understaffed and overwhelmed.
Don't these planes and the helicopter both have transmitters that send out signals that should have triggered an alarm in the plane or the helicopter?
I know the plane does. I don't know what that H-60 was equipped with on that front. That airplane was going to have what they call a TCAS. I forget what it is, terminal. It's a traffic control or collision avoidance system is what the CAS stands for. It's going to have that, but you got to remember too, they're almost landing, so they're just right. I mean, these two aircraft hit apparently right over the Potomac River, so you are within a half a mile, probably less, of the touchdown zone on the runway. When you're down in that area, that radar is going to be picking up everything, you know, in the air, on the ground, and all that kind of stuff. And so it's just not as effective. And I think, you know, at that point, too, the pilots are going to be focused on, especially on a night landing, on, you know, getting that plane safely to the runway. So they're going to be a little bit myopic on that front and not pay as much attention, you know, to that traffic radar at that point. And you're, you know, at that point, you're in highly controlled airspace. You do kind of, as a pilot, rely on the tower and the air traffic controllers to, you know, organize everything and keep you safe.
Are they actually flying the plane at that point, or is it on autopilot?
I would expect that they're flying the plane at that point.
Hmm. Do the chopper, though, they have night vision goggles, right? And I mean, is it still difficult in some ways to see every angle?
Well, it would be. I doubt they were on night vision goggles. They were probably just on a night VFR. The weather was not bad, and all of those lights, you know, flashing and blinking around there would really make looking through night vision goggles difficult. So they were probably just, you know, naked eye flying their helicopter and just watching, you know, for the blinking lights, you know, the red and the green of the aircraft in the area and in the lights of the airport, which would have been off to their right at the time, just through the cockpit glare shield.
All right. Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to explain all this to us.
Thank you, guys.
William Angeli, an aviation crash attorney and former Navy pilot, was flown more than 1,000 hours in different types of military airplanes and helicopters.
Scott, that is some very interesting stuff that he observed. And it'll be...
It goes along with, there was a story today published that said air traffic control centers nationwide are understaffed, and particularly at an airport like Reagan National, which is an extremely busy airport, small airport serving Washington, D.C. and Northern Virginia.
Yep. Right along
normally,
the water. People actually go there and park their cars nearby across the Potomac just to watch the planes take off.
One of the things that they said was there's normally a person assigned to just talk to the helicopters, because there are military bases here in D.C. They fly up and down the Potomac all the time. But in this instance, they didn't have that person. So this controller was doing his job and the helicopter job, which is not uncommon, they say, but they have their hands full.
You're right. It absolutely is a very, very important job.
You've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America.
On behalf of all of us here at VOA in Washington and around the world, thanks so much for joining us.
You can follow The Issue on X, on Blue Sky, and on Facebook at VOA The Issue. And you can get news anytime you want it on our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.